May 13, 2019, it's a What from Pedro show. Thank you. Watt from Pedro Show. We got the May Gray here in Pedro. I'm in my pad. I'll see Brother Matt Thursday. But I'm not man alone because the wonders of those engineers in Estonia with their Skype software. I got Lisa Belladonna with me. Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Mike?
I'm glad to be talking with you. You're in Ohio?
I am.
Which part?
I'm in what's called Hocking Hills, Ohio.
What kind of hills?
Way out the country. Excuse me?
What kind of hills?
It's called Hocking Hills.
Hocking Hills. What big towns are by?
It's basically not near a town. It's about an hour and a half away from any town. It's out in the forests.
Yeah, okay. What is the closest big town?
Excuse me?
What is the closest big town?
Columbus, Ohio.
Okay. So it's kind of in the south. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it west, north, east, south?
Southeast.
Okay. Yeah. So on the way to Cincinnati. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I can picture it because I've played many, many times in Ohio.
And, that's what I heard.
And actually, I played with a cat, Ed from Ohio, for 7.5 years. And he went to school in Columbus. But he was from the east side, a little town called Toronto. Not the Canada one, but the Ohio one.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I know what it is.
It's by, I think the big town by it is Steubenville.
Okay. Yep, that's correct.
Near Pittsburgh. Anyway, I should tell people what we started the show off with. John Coltrane doing But Not For Me. And then
beautiful.
Lisa Belladonna with Cahotek, which is probably named after a comet.
Yeah.
Well, they named it after something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe a native thing or something. I can't remember. But what I want to know, Lisa, is your earliest music recollection.
I would say the most significant one would be when I lived in the Cleveland area, I used to get my cousin used to babysit me all the time, and she was a teenager. And I'd say at age 3, she played Black Sabbath for me, and it pretty much changed my life. So, you know.
Your niece?
No, I'm sorry. I have made a mistake. No, she is my cousin. She is my aunt's daughter.
Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, I know of situations where a niece is older than an aunt. Believe it or not.
Yeah.
It's not that common.
Oh, yeah,
common,
no,
but.
Absolutely.
It's not that common. Okay, so she was 3, but how old were you?
I was 3. No, she was a teenager.
She's a teenager.
I was three years old.
Okay,
yeah, she used to babysit me all the time. She took me to a Aerosmith sound check in like 75 or 6, and that also blew me away. That was a pretty remarkable experience.
You
at that
5
time.
Or 6 to see Aerosmith. I saw Aerosmith blown away by ZZ Top. That was really great. This is before the pink cowboy hats and shit. The pad you grew up in, was there musical instruments, you know, in the living room, in the house, the piano?
No. No.
Were your parents players?
My aunt was a player. She was a country and western musician. So that household was basically my musical household. You know, she had a big Wurlitzer organ with all the lights and stuff.
Sure.
And like I said, her daughter was the one that turned me on to, you know, stuff of the 70s, which I'm a child of, you know, Aerosmith and Black Sabbath and Deep Purple and Uriah Heep and stuff like that, you know.
So and then, there was no instruments in your pad, but you would go over to your aunt's, and that's where the music, not just listening, but also stuff you could play on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And did you play on that organ?
Oh, every chance I got.
Okay. Did you, what about lessons or something?
No real formal lessons.
Okay. Did she show you stuff, your aunt?
Not really.
Okay.
You know, she just let me go nuts on the organ all the time and
what about
she didn't really let me play her guitar.
Oh, she had a guitar also?
Oh, she's a great country and western guitarist.
Yeah. Okay, so like an acoustic
finger style.
Like an acoustic guitar?
Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
What about at school? Were you in the choir or the school band, the marching band, shit like that?
No. No, none of that.
Did your school have it?
Yes.
Because, you know, nowadays a lot of schools, they don't have that stuff.
No, they don't. And, I mean...
So that's why
really,
I asked the question.
What made a huge impression
you know,
on me was a stepdad. And okay. His name was Dana. And he had a really extensive record collection. I mean, really extensive. Not necessarily huge, just really dynamic. And this was about the time I was maybe 8 or 9 when he and my mother married. And he turned me on to so much stuff. And that's where I first started to be able to have an instrument in my hands. You know, I've got...
Oh, so this record collection of your stepfather's inspired you to start making music.
Oh, well, I mean, I was addicted by the time, you know, I was 3. Yeah, another thing I kind of left out is my mother used to be a hostess manager for Holiday Inns up in the Cleveland area. And so she would take me with her during the day, and I would watch bands rehearse. So, you know, I would eventually just, like, sit patiently and wait my turn to pester the musicians. You know, I got to play my first time I ever get to sit behind a drum kit. It was a big, green, clear Vista-like kit. And
Ludwig.
Just stuff like that, you know. My mom took me to a biker's house, and he had this huge Hammond B3 with 2 Leslies, and he was playing July Morning by Uriah Heep.
I remember that song.
Was like, that was an amazing experience. And then he let me sit down, and like, this thing was so loud and powerful sounding, you know. So, I mean, little tiny, tiny bits, you know, but I didn't really
know. You know who was really into Uriah Heep? Greg Ginn from Black Flag, believe it or not.
Really?
That's what he told me. Yeah, yeah. But I remember July Morning. It was a big power ballad.
Big power
ballad. And I think bass player got electrocuted to death. And actually, their last bass player, maybe they're still playing. What was the guy, the organ man's name? I think he still got it, or Mick, the guitar.
Yeah, he's still around. Ken Hensley.
That's his name, Ken Hensley. But Mick Box mm-hmm. was the guitar man. But the last bass player, you know, they still tore around as oldies act, and was the guy from Spiders from Mars.
Trevor Boulder.
Trevor Boulder. Big influence on me.
Yeah, he's
anyway,
great.
Okay, so this biker guy played you July Morning on organ. I got a trio with Leslie playing. There's nothing like that. There's
no.
Nothing like it. Yeah, the sound is like, oh, my God. Okay. Were you attracted to keyboards? Because you brought up the organ at your aunt's, the biker's organ.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
There was something about the keyboard. Okay. Not so much
absolutely.
Piano, but like the organ, the big full notes.
Yeah, the piano came much later.
Okay.
Much, much later.
So did you take any music in school, like high school or junior high or grade school? No.
No, I lived at the library as
okay.
a teenager. And I'm self-taught, except when I was in high school, I had a teacher who was she admired my musical knowledge already, that she helped me study classical scores in high school. And
okay.
so that would say that's the most formal training I ever had. And she was really awesome. She had perfect pitch, and she was just really deep, you know, and really had a broad spectrum of what she knew about music.
What was her name?
Jean Singer.
Okay,
was her
give
name.
Some credit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right. Jean Singer.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Singer.
Yeah.
I want to play a paraphonic Preludium.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
okay.
sir.
Okay, here we go.
a wild old dream. Creatures of light, creatures of light, through love and of light. Bad love is easy to do every night, bad love is easy to do every night. Look, you may see good love is
Watch for Pedro show. We heard Paraphonic Preludium. Preludium.
That's correct. Preludium.
Preludium.
Okay. Take your preludiums.
Lisa Belladonna and King Champion Sounds, brand new out of Netherlands with the Cerebrum Bum. Now, they're from England, South London, I think.
Okay.
And a new album. I don't look forward to the day when I have to throw this jumper away. Oh, yeah, jumper. Over here, that's kind of a dress, right? And I think over there, it's a sweater.
Okay.
Like girls wear I remember my sisters, my ma saying something about a jumper, little dresses or something. But I met over there a couple years ago, I was playing with this guy, and he called a sweater. So, yeah, we're two people divided by a common language.
That's right.
And from southern London, I know these guys for sure, Crushed by Pimps with Thurston Less and Guided by Voices out of Dayton, Ohio. Mr. Bob Pollard, beautiful man, incredibly
Mitch
prolific.
Mitchell.
He's working on his, I think, 103rd album. Well, Bad Love is Easy to Do, and then Red Veils by Lisa Belladonna. Okay, so did you go to college after high school?
Briefly. I was too busy gigging.
Okay, so you're getting into music. When did you really get into playing it? During high school?
No. I would say I started playing by the age of 10.
Oh, okay. What are you playing at 10?
Guitar and drums. And then
did you have a guitar? Did you have a drum set?
Well, I did get a guitar. I got an electric quart guitar.
How'd you get it? Your parents? Newspaper route?
Well, I had a Beater acoustic that my babysitter gave me, and she was super stoked.
Okay.
And she was very rock and roll. And then I, asked my parents for an electric guitar, and then a friend of the family gave me an amplifier. And then I started doing odd chores and things to get money and bought a few drums. I didn't have a full kit, but I was playing drums. Where did I play?
Yeah, in your bedroom or the garage, your basement.
Yeah, I had to play the drums outside, but,
Outside?
Yeah.
In the open air.
In the open air. So I'd drag all my stuff out there.
Yeah, what about the neighbors?
Well, where I lived at that particular time.
Oh, it was cool. Okay.
Yeah, it was cool. It was outside. There was no one around. But then I lost all that stuff in a move. And
okay. When you got your guitar, did you take lessons or did you learn off of like copying off records?
I copied off of records, and then I joined a cover band when I was 11. And I was
really?
The lead singer.
Mm-hmm. How old were the other people?
They were 16 through 19.
So you're the young one. Got 11 years old.
Yeah.
In a band full of teenagers. And you're the singer.
I was the lead singer.
Now, did you do any singing before?
Well, I mean, just, I was always singing. I'm always singing. I sing all the time.
Yeah, but you told me you weren't in the choir or anything like that. Singing at church and stuff. No, just singing on your own, right?
Yep.
Autodidact.
Yeah.
That's okay. Believe me. I just want to, all the people I've had on the show, there's no two journeys through music that have been the same. So that's why I ask these kind of things.
No, absolutely.
And I
want to
show
not.
The listeners, in case they're a little scared.
Yeah.
See all these different ways to do it, people? Try it. That's why I'm asking these questions.
No fear.
There's in a way, no wrong answer.
No, there's no rules. There's no wrong answer.
There's no wrong answer. So, okay. So do you remember your first gig? Were you doing gigs at 11?
Yes. I did my first gig with that band at 11.
What was that like? What was it?
It was awesome. It was a big outdoor party, and it was also like one of the first times I ever smoked pot, and it fucked me up. I got through the set. I played the set first and didn't do that, but then, I was mingling around and kind of got into that, and then I don't remember much else. But
what about the gig itself?
The gig was great.
And you guys did copy songs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did some cool stuff, too. We did, like, Loudness and Virgin Steel and Rat and Grim Reaper and stuff like that. You know, it was the 80s. So it was, like, 80s rock and metal. And
Loudness, you're talking about the metal band from Japan?
Loudness, yeah. Uh-huh.
I think they're still around.
Akira Takasaki. That's right. I love those guys. I love them.
Well, you know what? A lot of 10-year-olds probably didn't know about Loudness, even if it was the 80s.
No.
That was pretty deep. Your friends were pretty hip. Yeah.
Yeah, they were. And so that's where, to answer your question about, you know, how I kind of learned, yeah, I learned a lot about guitar from my friend Eric Lowe, who I'm still friends with. And
that's great.
Yeah, he taught me a lot. He was really, really good. And I just would just constantly hang out with him. And, you know, and before long, you know, I was well on my own and writing songs by 12, you know.
Do you remember the first song you wrote?
Maybe not the first song. I remember the first good song I wrote, which is called Sleeping Death, which you can find it on YouTube. It's a song called Sleeping Death.
First song I wrote was called Mr. Bass, King of Outer Space.
Wow.
Yeah, and I only wrote one song. One or two, you know, maybe I've tried to do some other one, but, and this was about, like, the bass player does a solo that's so big it blows the rest of the band off the stage. Obviously, I was having issues, you know.
That sounds
awesome. In the older days, or my younger days, there was a real hierarchy to who played what in the fucking band. Thank God D. Boone tore all that up. But anyway, I forgot to ask you, what was the first record you bought for yourself?
First record I ever bought for myself was Black Sabbath Star Gold. And
Gold.
It was a German import. It had a picture of Geezer Butler on the front. Only him. Had a great big import sticker. And the guy at the record store says, yeah, you can't get that record anywhere else. And I was like, oh, man, I want that so bad. And I, like, had to do a bunch of stuff. And I finally went down and paid for it. And it was like a
anthology?
Compilation. Huh?
Was it kind of an anthology?
Yeah, yeah. It had, like, basically stuff from Black Sabbath 1 to Sabbath Bloody Sabbath. That's about it, you know.
That's kind of where I liked them up to. I saw California Jam, and they played some songs off Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. After that, I didn't really, yeah. But those first five records, really incredible. Especially,
absolutely.
Yeah, especially big effect on me. I mean, Master Reality kind of recorded small, but really good stuff. the bass. Geezer Butler, big influence on me. What was the first gig you saw?
Judas Priest.
I saw their first
1979.
Gig. Maybe it was that tour. I saw them play. Their first SoCal gig was at the Whiskey A Go Go. If you can believe it. And Gary Valentine opened, right? The original bass player from Blondie. Yeah, it was this little pop trio opened up for Judas Priest. And Bob Halford, he could just barely stand up. He was so choked out of his mind. But he could sing. God damn, his voice was so intense. It was, what was the album? Sad Wing? He had like some Fallen Angel on the cover, right? Sad Wings of Destiny or something.
I'm jealous. I love that record.
It might have been. I think the big song was The Ripper.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
And I think it was the same tour that was your first gig.
No, it was Stained Class. It was a little later.
79? Okay. Mm-hmm. Then maybe.
That would have been 76, I think, when you saw him probably.
No, I know it wasn't 76. Because I hadn't gone to the Whiskey till Punk Movement.
I see.
You know, so maybe 77 or 78. And I remember Stained Class. That was later on. It was later on.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first one they released here because they had an album in England, right? Called Rock and Roller or some shit with a razor blade on the cover.
That's my favorite.
But the one that was, yeah, I think that was before Sad Wings. And then the one after that you did a Joan Baez cover or something.
Yeah.
Right.
It's awesome.
Green Malagishi is a Fleetwood Mac. Anyway, I want to talk about you. Not so much Judas Priest. But that's
I'll
interesting.
Talk about whatever.
I mean, who turns you on to that gig? Like, hey, the Priest is playing.
You know, I had a friend of the family's who was kind of a bad boy, and he was super sweet to me, though, and he would come pick me up on Saturday mornings and take me for car rides in a Chevy Nova, and we would go, like, 90 miles an hour back country roads, and he had a Craig Power Play 8-track, and he would play, like, Judas Priest, Sabbath, you know, Thin Lizzy, Bad Company, all that stuff from the 70s. And, you know,
Bad
that's
Company,
where I got turned on to that stuff.
Bad Company was big on the radio. They were pretty radio friendly. Those other bands, not so much. But they were big, big gigs, draws. Anyway, at the end of first hour, May 13, 2019, edition WAP Pedro Show, special guest, Lisa Belladonna, hold tight for hour two. May 13, 2019 is the second hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
sang today had gotten in our way. Still we laugh and sing and float away. The bees that stung your lips and eyes came as a small surprise. But you're as sweet as honey, now must go away. I can see your breath and blood as I lose you into the flood. Don't know if God is on our side, but I know you'll wait for me with your head in between your knees. I found you naked on the phone, lying on a bed of stone, with our heart around you like a model home. I lit a match and then you cried. Something innocent had died. I don't know why, but I laid down and stayed inside. I said that fire is too high. Come closer, get warm with me. Lying here underneath the tree. You said the flames have gone outside. Watch as I walk away, like I did again yesterday.
Watt from Pedro show started off the second hour with conclusions from Lisa Belladonna. Then Stefano Pellia, the last tune off his latest record, inspired by our poet friend Dante Gitteri. It's called Melusina. And, you know, those days, the guitar man for Sonia de Maynayo. He was in Pedro back in January with Fidel Paolo. We recorded third Sonia de Maynayo album. The Fiction after that with Dream Number 6, the late great Josh Michelle of Strong Beach. And then Nightfall, Lisa Belladonna. Lise, when did you get into recording?
I got into recording when I was probably 14 or 15.
And what you had for a machine?
I had two Sanyo cassette decks.
Ah, so you would bounce. You know, Lou Barlow did that. You just play it, right? So it's the microphone picks it up.
Well, I had collected the two tape decks, and then I had a Tronix PA with spring reverb. And so I would record onto one deck and do some editing.
Right.
And then I would play it through the PA, play drums with it, and then you had two little microphones that went into the other cassette deck.
Sure.
And then I would play that to the other cassette deck, and then I would just keep doing that over and over until, you know, it just turned into garbage, you know.
A lot of
hits.
But
then I got, someone loaned
but
me.
But still, you were doing the Les Paul thing, sound on sound.
That's it.
Beautiful.
You know.
And then somebody, what, lent you something?
Oh, they lent me a, it was a really nice one. It was a Fostex 4-track cassette. And that changed my game, you know? And
yeah.
Then I basically went from that to working in a jingle studio, you know?
Where? Cleveland?
In a place called Marietta, Ohio.
Okay. A jingle. So like little commercial things and shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I edited tape and cut commercials together and
So on the technical side, yeah, great.
Oh yeah, I mean, they threw me.
Well,
right
I thought in. Maybe you were singing or playing, you know, also.
Well, I did that too.
Okay.
That's basically, you know, I taught at this music store, and the people that owned the music store, they had a couple of
you
stores.
Became a music teacher.
Yeah, by
wow,
teacher, yeah.
How?
Well, I left home at 15.
Okay.
So I had to make money.
Sure,
you know?
Sure, sure.
And I did other stuff. You know, it wasn't nearly as cool as teaching music. So
what'd you teach? Guitar?
Guitar and bass. Mm-hmm.
Bass guitar, too.
That's right.
I didn't know. I I'm working on this mind reading thing. Until then, you still got to use words. But, all of a sudden my ears, you know, you say bass guitar, okay. So when did you get on bass guitar?
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay.
It just came natural, you know, and I played in bars too.
Shit, I played a guitar with Lisa. You got to understand, I played a guitar for like 3 years with four strings. I didn't even know what a real bass was. I mean, I saw them on album covers. I didn't know they had bigger strings.
Yeah, well, the thing
it was 16 when I finally figured out a bass had bigger strings. Bass meant bottom. It meant low. I had
right.
no idea.
Well, I had a piano class that. You know, like, basically the teachers were taking notice, you know, like, in school. You know, I mean, it was a joke. But basically I would do the whole week's lessons in one day so I could go play the piano. Because if you could get done with the lessons
yeah.
on the little electric, like, they had like these electric organs that were all connected together with headphones.
Yeah.
And if we got done with that, then we could go practice on the piano. So I would just churn through the lessons. For the whole week.
Sure.
And that way I could go sit and play the piano. And so I would just sit there and compose and write and practice. And, you know, I had
what
books
about this
that
tune
I
here? What about this tune here? Oh, yeah, the left hand is the bass, of course. So you understood. This tune, Impressions for Moog Synthesizer, 16mm film and magnetic tape. Is it kind of self-explanatory?
Yeah, pretty
okay,
much
so.
Okay,
let's listen. Thank you.
tonight. Put away all your guns and knives. I am waiting, Lord,
this life.
Watt from Pedro Show. Yeah, impressions from Luke Synthesized 60mm Film and Magnetic Tape, Lisa Belladonna. Then some live Spain with Lorelei, Petra Hayden. Her brother Josh is in Spain, so the band. They're in a dream. And then finally, Lisa Belladonna with Ramenersglung. I mean, ZQHL. I mean, that's a diphthong there. That's a consonant diphthong. God damn. How do you ZQHL. How do you say that?
It means a story within a story.
Okay. In which language?
I don't know.
Okay. Geschichte, I think, is a story in German, so...
Synthesizer story.
Yeah, synthesizer story. You know, look mm-hmm. you, when we were off air, you were offering me insights about this Impressions tune. And, talk about it. It's an interesting story. About
sure. Initially, it was for the Moog synthesizer company. They just put out a new semi-modular synthesizer called the Matriarch that I participated in the promotional film for it, in the actual film, and did like the opening music for it. One of the things I wanted to offer them is they really loved the analog aesthetic with my work and my studio. So I thought, well, I would do a piece with this instrument straight to magnetic tape and then give it really the tape treatment, if you will, you know, rubbing up against the capstan and things like that. And, you know, tape filtering with the, you know, the parametric EQs and just, it just creates a very picturesque sound that goes well with film and tape and stuff like that. So there's little bits of it that they wound up using in the film, but most of it's, you know, just from the shoot that I did with them. And but then, I wanted them to have it at their disposal.
How did you make the Kinect?
How did I meet the Moog guys? Oh, that's a good question. I would say over the years working with Earthquaker Devices.
That's right. Akron, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met them in L.A. You know, a handful of times, and then
good
in
people.
Nashville.
I met some of them too. They're bitching people. Respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're great people.
So this is you're talking. This is kind of recent then.
This thing just came out like 2 weeks ago. So.
Wow, really?
So part of the whole thing with Afternoon Dreams, the album, is basically I wasn't able to go to Moog Fest. And I had just done the video for them, and they released the video right before Moog Fest. So what I decided to do is, since I was smart about it, when I had the Matriarch in my hands for a little bit, I'm still waiting to get mine, I recorded everything that I did with the intention of making it into a musical piece. You know, I didn't like really just fuck around on it. I really played everything I could, you know, come up with on the top of my head. So every day of Moog Fest, I released a track on YouTube every day of Moog Fest over the 4 days. And on the Sunday of Moog Fest, the closing, I released a double album set of music featuring that synthesizer and other Moog synthesizers.
And what makes this Matriarch synthesizer different?
Well, it's a semi-modular, which means you can do a lot of expansive things with it in terms of modulation possibilities and panning of it in stereo. It's paraphonic. You can play four voices. So it has a very vintage sort of approach to it, which I like. That's really my style. And it sounds phenomenal. It is a beautifully rich filter and output gain, you know, output stage is really clear. So it makes for a really beautiful soundscapes. And
what about tuning?
Tuning?
Because wasn't that
really
a problem of the old analog?
Well, they've refined the power supplies. That's the biggest problem with, like, you know, I have a lot of old gear too.
Okay.
And the bottom line is just replacing the power supplies and, you know, replacing caps and resistors and things like that. So, you know, basically it gets proper voltage. If a unit gets proper voltage, then it's going to stay in tune.
You know, Tom Feck, he goes under the name Tobacco, and he's got a band called Black Moss Super Rainbow.
Yeah,
he's out of Pittsburgh, and he's way into these old analog synthesizer. You told me that was a big problem, was the tuning. So maybe I'll hip into the fact about this thing about the power supplies. Because that makes good sense. You know, I got a degree in electronics. I understand what you mean. Because they probably, everything's, you know, rooted to the power it's getting. So if that's stable in one place, maybe the tuning stays stable.
Called subtractive synthesis for a reason. You know, basically you're scaling down the voltage per each thing that you're doing with it. Okay. You know, and so in order to do that, you need it to be stable so you can properly, you know, kind of like sculpting, you know, you sculpt the sound from a big bulk of tone into something that's musical or visual or textural or, you know, whatever your intention is, you know.
Sounds good. We're at the end of the second hour, May 13, 2019, edition of Wack Pedro Show. Special guest, Lisa Belladonna. Hold tight for hour three. May 13, 2019, it's the third hour of the Wack Pedro Show.
My first real deep crush girlfriend is cool and smart and funny. Many fine qualities. Unfortunately, fidelity is not one of them.
For Pedro Show, we start the third hour off with Lisa Belladonna doing Mountain Lake Wilderness. Then Safe Word with Switch. And Chris Butler, I think he's living in Akron now, but Cleveland a long time, convenience. He had a band called The Waitresses.
Okay.
A while ago, and so yeah, some Cleveland connect. You know. Also know John Petrovich in Cleveland, Copra Verde, his band. There's a lot of good musicians out of Ohio. Incredible. A lot of good cats. And I think it's the only state with a pennant. Everybody else has got flags. So, you got a festival you're going to play really quick coming up, right?
That's right.
Tell us about it.
Monolith on the Mesa. Yeah, I'm very excited about it.
Where's the Mesa? Daniel's,
it's in Taos, New Mexico.
Okay. I was wondering, because really famous, the Three Mesas, right, for the Hopis. It's probably not one of those, but... And for you people, listeners, Mesa is Spanish for table, but it's kind of a rock formation, too, that looks like fucking table, or UFO landing site or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a really awesome event. I mean, and Daniel Sanchez has been, he's one of the main people behind it, and he's been a pleasure to deal with and to help put things together and such. And so I'm very excited to be a part of it.
You
absolutely.
The big Mesas, the Three Mesas for the Hopis, they're actually in Arizona. What an idiot. But I get a lot of my Kachina dolls in New Mexico, so that's why my twisted mind twisted that up. And actually, they're made by Navajos and Zunis. They just dug the Hopi thing so much, you know? You know about these little dolls? They're little dolls of the... when they dress up as... like, the gods don't rule over them, right? They kind of live near them. So there's a corn one, and there's a sun one, and a cloud one, and a bean one. And it's really interesting. I think the only one of the few matriarch, talking about that synthesizer name, the Hopi people were matriarch. Matriarchal, I should say. So, okay, how can people find out about this festival? Is there a website?
Yes. I believe it's just monolithonthemesa.com. You can find it on Instagram under Monolith on the Mesa.
And Monolith,
a bunch of
we're
people
talking
are playing it. The Obsessed. Are on
we're,
it.
We're talking Monolith. Are we talking like Stanley Kubrick 2001? Remember, the Monolith is always checking in. It's always checking in on the development of the humans, right?
That's right.
Really
well,
was bizarre.
I'm definitely going to take them to space.
You know, I ask people this question all the time. And the opening scene, right? Our forebears are playing around with bones, and they find out you can murder with it. And then they throw...
Mm-hmm.
I think his name's Bone Crush. One of them's got a name even, right? And then he throws the bone into the air. And then what does it turn into?
I don't know.
Everybody says a spaceship, but if you read Mr. Clark's book, you know it's a spaceship, but it's not people, it's a nuclear weapon.
Oh.
Yeah, and in the book, it's just generic, you know, but Stanley Kubrick made sure there was U.S. markings on it. Yeah, because they try to kill the Star Child with it. It's not that apparent in the movie, but if you read the book, you know about this. But everybody thinks it's just a spaceship. It's actually a nuclear weapon, so I try to hit people with that. What day are you playing this Monolith on the Mesa?
It's the 17th.
And we're at 13th, so in 4 days.
That's right.
You going to drive there?
I'm flying. No, yeah,
okay.
I'm not driving there.
No. Yeah, just over the Rockies.
Yeah, no.
Now, look, I want to play the Stormweaver. What can you tell me about
this? Oh, yeah,
that's this too.
That's a fun one.
You want to tell me something about this tune before I play it?
Yeah, absolutely. This Stormweaver, basically that whole record, Circulus, was a record that I made just a couple of weeks ago. And we had some really, really, really gorgeous weather where I live. And just outside of my studio, there I have like a deck, you know, very long wooden deck. And so I just decided, you know, the forecast looked perfectly clear, so I decided to go ahead and just set up a rig out, like a performance rig outside. And just sent cables into the studio and basically did most of that record live. And so basically I, you know, just watched the sundown and, you know, and just kind of developed. I had some of the ideas for the record already in my head musically, you know, and I just, you know, got the sequencers dialed up and, you know, I have a old Mellotron and a digital Mellotron and, you know, a big pedal board of Earthquake Devices stuff and kind of wanted to just keep it very simple for as elaborate of a rig as it is. I have a series of chimes and bells and gongs, and then I always have a couple of reel-to-reel decks in my performance rig when I can, for different kinds of things. Either sometimes synthesizer sounds, really complex clustery sounds, or field recordings that I can run through the synthesizers, you know, and their filters and stuff. And, yeah. So, yeah, I did that record outside, which made it, gave it a whole other aesthetic.
Thank you. one.
Pedro Show, yeah, Stormweaver from Lisa Belladonna, just recently done. And then finally, Space Cadets 1.0 from Needle Drop. Where can people find out about you on the internet, Lisa?
They can find out about me at lisabelladonna.com or lisabelladonna at Bandcamp or lisabelladonna2600 on Facebook or on Instagram under my name.
I'm so glad you got your own website. I mean, it's okay to put flyers up on those other telephone poles. But having your own, you know, that's the fanzine aesthetic, you know, or ethic or whatever the fuck. Nobody in between. I think we all should have them. Yeah, it's like having your own fanzine, right? That stuff in the 70s, it didn't die. It just changed the format.
That's
you don't have to go to Kiko's. You pay the ISP guy instead. After this festival, what's your next plan?
I'm going to Japan for a week, and I'm going to go on tour with Boris.
Wow, great band.
Great band.
I played a lot of that stuff here on the show.
Boris.
I gave Takeshi, the bass brother, Watt Plower. They're made in Toledo, you know, the Reverend Guitars.
Yeah.
And I gave him one because they said to me, I got a new model came out, so I gave him the old one. But good luck on your voyage there. It's been beautiful having you on the show. I love your music. I love your adventurous spirit.
Thank you, Mike.
I want you to keep on keeping on, please.
Absolutely.
Okay, people, it's been the May 15, 2019 edition of the Watt from Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.